located at 1224 Mangrove and is on Facebook. You can call him at 345-9685. Nutraceuticals.
Yeah.
All right, so that knocks out one read. So with no further ado, let's start Chico's only locally produced sports talk show radio. Talking about practice starts right now.
We talking about practice. Not a game. We talking about practice. It's easy to sum it up. We just talk about practice. I mean, listen, we talking about practice. I mean, how silly is that, man? We talking about practice. We talking about practice, man.
Yes, indeed. We are talking about practice. I'm your host, Drill Gilbert. Alongside the usual suspects, Jonathan Newberry, Derek Isamaki. What's up, fellas?
Yo, what's good?
So, the Super Bowl is set, so we'll get into that. Also, the Niners look to be closing in on a head coach. The Warriors, we discussed them moving to San Francisco last week. So we'll get back into that as well. As the Baseball Hall of Fame for 2017 has been announced. And Derek goes off about some fairly benign things that he hates. So that'll be fun.
Usually. Yeah.
And Wayne Rooney. And some Wayne Rooney talks.
Rooney.
So. But, of course, we do start with Championship Sunday in the NFL. The Falcons and Noobs New England Patriots will be meeting in the Super Bowl this year. So, unfortunately, those two teams won. Everyone else who watched those games lost because they were pretty boring games.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers finally ran out of magic in having, you know, dudes that just picked up off the street make ridiculous catches along the sidelines. And that run finally came to an end. I don't think it was very shocking that it ended because they kept beating teams that were better than them. I think it's obvious anyone who was watching NFL this year would argue the Cowboys were a better team. The Giants were a better team overall, I'm talking, not at the quarterback position. But in any case, we do have our Super Bowl set, and I just wanted to get your guys' takeaway, maybe starting with you, Noobs, because you are a Pats fan, and they did it again, man. They find themselves back in this position again. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Seventh Super Bowl
for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady is just really, it's unparalleled in league history. Just thinking about the successes this franchise had, I can't believe that it's actually going to be their ninth Super Bowl altogether. Because when I was growing up, I mean, they were terrible, except for the one Chicago Bears Super Bowl where they got blown out. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were an awful team. And to sit here now, 30 years later, thinking that they're, you know, arguably one of the most successful franchises, they haven't won as many as the Steelers or the Cowboys.
Yeah.
But if they win this one, they'll tie Dallas for...
And the Niners.
Yeah. Thank you. And that was the other 15-year run that I think was the most sustained success. Mm-hmm. And the Niners were able to do it with two coaches, with Walsh and Seifert, two quarterbacks.
Right.
It's yet to be seen if Jimmy Garoppolo will kind of step into that Steve Young role. But it might not be anytime soon because Tom Brady looks like he's playing like 29 instead of 39.
It is ridiculous. He's 39.
It is.
Yeah.
He's like, you shouldn't be. Like, the last guy to do this was 39, was last year, and he could barely, like, throw a ball out at a Barnside.
To give Peyton a break, which I never do, he did have like two neck surgeries, I think, that like fused his spine together. So Brady has been relatively injury free, save for that one season where he missed every game except for the first one. But you know, Brady takes great care of his body. I mean, he's a nutritional freak, you know. So good for him. I mean, if he actually plays until his mid-40s, it's gonna be one of those interesting things to see. Like, will Belichick ever have to make that call where he benches Brady?
Like, who goes first, Belichick or Brady, you know? Like,
well, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you can't, you know, if it's not broken, they're definitely not going to fix it anytime soon. So I guess it just kind of depends on how long, Belichick's only like 62. know, 63, 64, something like that. So, I mean, you see some of these coaches, you know, Tom Coughlin was coaching into his 70s.
Pete Carroll's in his 70s.
Pete Carroll's in his 70s. And the other thing, too, is
he looks like the best of all of them, though.
Pete Carroll looks great. Yeah. He looks phenomenal for a 63-year-old man or whatever he is. Tons of energy. He's in great shape. Bill Belichick obviously doesn't take as good care of his body, probably. But at the same time, when you think about, like, what else would Bill Belichick do? Like, if Pete retired, he could go on, like, speaking tours.
Sure.
Bill Belichick's not going to go give speeches.
He's going to go fishing.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but I don't think there's anything else that Bill, like, his whole life is football.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I just don't see him doing anything else. So as long as he's mentally able to do it, he could wind up doing it for another 10 years. And Kraft's not going to push him out the door anytime soon. But I'm getting back to your point real quick about how we had, like, Green Bay was kind of overachieving there. I do think that even though we had some upsets and some maybe some teams that were kind of, like, flying a little too high, I do think that we have whittled it down to the two best teams.
Yeah.
You know, as great as Dallas was in the regular season, you know, with Atlanta's experience, you know, the Jones-Matt Ryan connection has been going for a while. And, you know, and their coach, you know, their coach was like, you know, the head of that Seattle defense a few years ago. So I think, you know, overall, you've got two really good teams. Just to give Vegas a little nod, the over-under's at 58.5, which I think is probably about right. But expect a high-scoring game, I think.
I think so, too. I mean, obviously, New England comes into this game with a much better defense.
Yes.
And I think that, if anything, that might be the difference in the game, I would expect. But how about Chris Hogan having the exact same stat line as Julio Jones? 9 catches, 180 yards, 2 TDs. Julio Jones, 9 catches, 180 yards, 2 TDs.
Yeah.
One of them makes $13.5 million this year. One of them makes $1 million, and this is just what the Patriots do. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. They get rid of Chandler Jones, they get rid of Collins, and they just keep on trucking. I mean, it's insane that they've had this sustained greatness, and it doesn't seem to matter who's playing on their team. I mean,
they're like, speaking of their defense right there, we talked a lot about Kansas City and their defense, and their inability last week to stop Le'Veon Bell was very noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, Le'Veon Bell didn't play that much, but the time that he was playing, those gaps that were so prevalent last game were not there at all.
Yeah.
Like, that New England's front line were just keeping them on point. Like, there were no gaps there for Le'Veon Bell to, like, keep his dip dodging and ducking around people, you know? And granted, he got out of the game fairly early on, and we didn't really get to see him and the rest of it, but still, I mean, their defense really was just, they stepped up for the game.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that would have made all that much difference, to be honest with you.
I mean, that game got out of hand pretty quick. It never really felt like the Steelers got into any type of rhythm on offense. And so, I mean, I don't know. We were discussing earlier off air that Ben Roethlisberger kind of had a pretty brutal offseason, or postseason, I mean, and it may be due to some injury, but at the same time, I mean, he just didn't look good towards that last stretch. Even though the Steelers kept winning, that was one thing that wasn't discussed much, is Ben really wasn't playing like the Ben we're used to seeing, throwing the ball, you know, 40, 50, 60 yards down the field several times a game. A lot of the touchdowns they were getting were from their running game, were out of the backfield, throwing to Le'Veon Bell as well. And, you know, with some of their wide receivers just making ridiculous efforts after or runs after the catch. So I don't know. I really still don't feel like New England has been tested this postseason. I thought the Texans defense, sure, made it interesting there for about 6.5 minutes in the third, and then that game was over. And the Steelers just really had nothing for them. And they're going to face another soft defense, that secondary, as we saw yesterday. I mean, even though Aaron Rodgers didn't have the game that we've seen him have this postseason, or the last 8 games for that matter, they got some pressure on him, but that secondary, they were still giving up a ton of yards.
Yeah, but they also had a 24-0 lead.
Yeah,
right.
And I think also, too, you know, I will agree, though, that Atlanta, because not only did they give up a ton of yards, but Green Bay dropped a ton of passes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, very easily catchable balls. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they could have even given up more yards and more points. But Atlanta's D, they've played well enough to get done what they've wanted to get done. As far as New England, it's like you can't fault them for maybe not being tested. They're beating everybody. They're beating all comers.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean? And so, you know, their one loss with Brady is a 1-point last second defeat at home against Seattle.
Yeah.
When they had a chance to win that game on the last play. So I don't know. I feel like this is just, you know, we kind of touched on this a couple weeks ago. I think this might be the best Patriots team of all 16 years, which is saying a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree. It might be the most balanced because that first year that they won the Super Bowl with Tom Brady, Tom Brady didn't do much at all, and they were very defense-oriented that year. And obviously, over the years, it's been a lot of Tom Brady and, you know, the guys around him, but on the offensive side of the ball. But yeah, I agree. You mentioned it weeks ago that you thought this was the best team that they've had going into the postseason, and I disagreed on its face, and then as I started looking in the numbers, I realized, like, wait, you might be onto something. Yeah.
Just because they're so balanced. I mean, the year they were 18-0, their defense was ranked like 31st in the league. You know what I mean? It was the Brady Moss connection that was just blowing people out, and they didn't really have to rely on their defense. This year, it's like when they get in trouble a little bit, I mean, Houston wouldn't have even scored if they hadn't fumbled twice.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I mean, their defense is phenomenal. And the offense, like, you look at some of these guys, like you mentioned Chris Hogan and Gronkowski's, you know, injured, and Edelman's still doing what he does, but you don't have anybody that you're like, oh my God, that's so scary.
Yeah.
You know, but Brady he works with whoever he's going to work with. You know, and they either, you know, they can run the ball when they need to run the ball. They can do short passes. They can even stretch the defense, which is surprising considering that I don't think they have a receiver over 6'2", except for maybe Floyd.
You know?
So anyway, it's so impressive to me what's going on. Now, getting back to what you said about those early New England teams with Brewski and Vrabel and Lauren Molloy, Ty Law, those were some unbelievably defensive-oriented teams.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a team like that to derail the greatest show on turf,
right?
You know, that 2000 Rams team or 2001 Rams team. But you know, Brady did get them in field goal position, very efficient drive, you know what I mean, and played well enough. I think they only put up 20 points or whatever it was, but still, he is now obviously so much better. And then when you pair that with a defense that's comparable to those early 2000 teams, then I just don't think Atlanta's going to really have anything. They're going to put up some points and play well, but I just don't see them beating New England.
Yeah, Derek, I'm surprised you haven't given me a hard time about the don't trust the Falcons thing.
Well, yeah, I was going to say we haven't really gone on the Falcons game
yet. All right, let's go there.
Yeah, I was going to say it's about time that you've had to swallow this right now because you've been doing nothing but talking mad smack on the Atlanta Falcons saying never to trust them. Now, granted, they haven't won yet, but they've gotten there. They've kind of surpassed, I think, most of our kind of idea of what this team would be. We always say that they're a good team, a playoff contending team, but not really Super Bowl challenging, but here we kind of both are swallowing a little bit of something. You more so because you've done nothing, but every single time the Falcons do something good, you're like, no.
But
remember
though,
that one guy that got, you know, the NFL Man of the Year? Yeah,
Eugene Robinson. Yeah,
yeah, you love to bring him up.
And he solicited a prostitute the night before the Super Bowl.
That has nothing to do with this team, but still, yes, a fun little quid about the Atlanta Falcons.
Historically speaking, though, and that was, you know, that 99 year was their first Super Bowl. It was the first year they even sniffed any kind of real success, I believe. And, you know, and then you have the Matt Ryan era where previous to this season, they were 1-4 in the playoffs.
Right.
And twice they had gone 13-3 and were the number one seed. So, you know.
I mean, they've never had the star talent quite on, you know, to really take them over that top. I mean, Michael Vick was nice, but he didn't really have any else to throw to, and it was just really his show. Now, like I said, this team is, like I said, it's much more balanced. I think we're kind of dogging on their defense more so than they kind of deserve. I feel like there's a solid defense out there, and I mean they held Green Bay in check, granted some drops and whatnot, but they held Green Bay in check until the second half.
They did, but I mean they were giving up like 30-40 points to a lot of teams this year.
True.
Like, New Orleans scored a bunch on them, Carolina scored a bunch on them.
One thing is a lot of that was in the beginning of the season. At the back end of the season, they really tightened up their defense and they got actually really efficient out there, so I think they're coming into this New England game very well tested, and they have a good run about them. And I mean, that Julio Jones is a freak of nature.
Dude, absolutely.
He was just like, get off me yesterday.
It's insane. I mean, watching him play, it's just, I remember we talked about this two or three years ago when the Falcons were on Hard Knocks, and it was the first year Julio Jones was back.
Yeah.
And he just made one move in training camp, and I was like, that's the nastiest thing I've ever seen. And it wasn't just, you know, a ho-hum move for him, and he just kind of twisted his hips and made this move that just, it seems like you got to be an alien to pull that type of stuff off. And I absolutely love Quintarius Lopez Jones, a.k.a. Julio Jones. Just want to remind you where this Don't Trust the Falcons came from. It's not just Eugene Robinson. It's not just that they blew a 17-point third quarter lead to the Niners a few years ago. It's not just that Dave Hampton, their first 1,000-yard rusher, breaks 1,000 yards just to get for them to stop the Falcons to stop the game to present him with an award for the very next play for him to get tackled in the backfield at a loss and finish the season with 995 yards. It's not just that. They have had a history of being untrustworthy. And so until they won the Super Bowl, I'm going to continue to say, don't trust the Falcons. And if you're betting out there, take New England.
And Arthur Blank looks like he should be, you know, running some evil carnival.
I said yesterday he looks like the butler at a haunted hotel.
Yeah, right? Something dark about that mustache. Yeah. I don't know.
But the one thing, this is totally off topic, but the one thing I do have to commend, I guess it is on topic, Arthur Blank for doing that. A lot of teams, and we're going to get to this with the Golden State Warriors, a lot of teams have trouble embracing their, minorities. Let's just put it out there plain and simple. So a lot of the advertising you see to their base is a lot of pandering to an upper middle class white demographic. Arthur Blank, Atlanta is a affluent black city, probably the only one in the U.S. where they have the numbers of African Americans that they have at the wages that they're making on average. And so what Arthur Blank has kind of done is he said, you know what, forget that. Black money spends the same as white money, and he has 100% gone for that market. Ludacris was doing the halftime show yesterday, you know.
Buddha.
And you contrast that with, who was it? Edwin McCarthy or some guy I've never heard of doing the Patriots game, you know, and it's just, it's kind of a cool thing to see because Atlanta, if you just look in the stands, it's so diverse, and that's something you don't get. That type of diversity in a lot of other markets. And, you know, so it's cool for those fans and to send the Georgia Dome, that's been a place of so much sorrow and heartbreak over the years, as we were just lamenting here. I think it's a cool thing for that fan base, and they should be excited, and I do think they have a chance, except for the fact that they're the Falcons. So if I was betting this game, I'm 100% I'm swallowing that 3 points and taking the Pats. But anyway, that's just me.
I also don't think there should be some kind of like 30-year rule when you build a new stadium. You can't build one 20 years later.
Yeah, that's...
This is like, you know what I mean? Especially if you're using...
You gotta make it last, you know?
Those things are giant structures that are supposed to be made to last. Like, you look at the Colosseum in Rome, that thing's still standing. you know what I mean?
Let's go play games there,
like,
man.
Barely.
Yeah, come on.
But no, you know what I'm saying, though? I mean, it's like, You know, I think San Diego, it's time to get a new stadium. Well, now they're moving to LA, so it's a moot point.
Right.
But again, I mean, like, why couldn't you build your own stadium in San Diego?
But like
not,
you know,
the people, the owner.
Oakland's, real quick editorial note. Last week when I was saying that, you know, when the Warriors are moving and that the Raiders might move, I mistakenly said that would leave Oakland without a team, and I overlooked the A's. So I apologize to all the A's.
No,
they're still there.
I do think you mentioned
it's hard to see them.
I think, to be fair to you, Noobs, I think you did mention them, but there has been discussion of them moving possibly to Fremont or to another city entirely, or another region entirely. So speaking of the Warriors moving, I want to get to this Bomani Jones sound because we were talking about this last week, and I think he really surmises the point I was trying to make just a lot more eloquently than I was making the point. So let's get to this sound, and then there's a quick article I want to get to, and then I'll move off of this until, you know, the summer or something, and I start going crazy over it again. So let's get to that right now. This sound comes courtesy ESPN Radio, the right time with Bomani Jones. So let's go.
Cisco, for a lot of people, doesn't feel necessarily like a move. At the same time, given that this is happening right around when the Raiders are, you know, looking to leave town, it kind of stinks the idea of like Oakland as sports town kind of dying. And the thing that stinks about Oakland as sports town kind of dying is, all right, I love Oakland. I know a lot of people like to poo-poo Oakland for a number of reasons. I love going to Oakland. Oakland is like a collection of all the weirdos of the world in one place. It's the city that gives you the Black Panthers and the Hells Angels at the same damn time, right? Like, that's Oakland, right? When you go there, there's just kind of like, there's just sort of a freedom to Oakland, at least old Oakland. This new Oakland is a little bit different, but that old Oakland, like, there's a certain freedom that came from it. And the thing that was interesting is that all their sports franchises reflected that personality of Oakland. Like, you think about those World Series A's of the 70s and the World Series A's of the late 80s. It was kind of an outlaw, renegade sort of personality. You think of the Raiders. Excuse me. Yeah, the Raiders, of course, right? Full-on outlaw, renegade personalities. You even look at the Warriors before they got this collection of really nice kids. Like, think about that 2007 Warriors team that made that run. Baron Davis, Matt Barr, Steven Jackson. Like, all of those dudes, right? That was Oakland. Like, they were Oakland, and that arena was Oakland. You know, the noise, everything else, like, it was Oakland. Now, I'm sure things have changed a bit over the last couple of years. The ticket prices have gone up. The team's gotten better. So you got more people who are going to come across the bay in order to go watch the Warriors play and everything else. But I always viewed the Warriors as Oakland squad. I did not view them as so much the Bay Area's team or a San Francisco team. I always viewed them as Oakland's team. And so, like, the idea that they're leaving is whack. Like, it really is for me just kind of whack. And I say this to somebody who's not from California. I just could notice the connection between the personality of Oakland and the personality of all of those teams. And that.
So, as Bomani Jones said there, Oakland just really does. It has a culture of its own.
Certain panache.
Yeah, and it's just, it's hard. I'm not from Oakland. I spent a decent amount of time there as a kid playing ball. I played AAU for an Oakland team. And it just has, he mentioned the word freedom, and it really does. When he was talking about a collection of weirdos, it really does just have this historically, like, this just unique feel to it. And I think part of what stings so much is he was talking about the connection that city has with the team and how the players end up almost reflecting what Oakland is. And I wanted to get to this article by Marcus Thompson in the Mercury News, if I could, just real quick. So he says, I asked why they weren't the Oakland Warriors, and he's talking to the owners of the team at the time, years ago. And after they introduced the retro San Francisco jerseys, I asked why there were no Oakland uniforms. Each time they gave me the same answer. Our fans are from all over the Bay. We have season ticket holders in Walnut Creek, Concord, so on. We have to think about our fans in the South Bay. We've been Golden State for so long. Why change? Blah, blah, blah. Translation, Oakland is too violent, too ghetto, too ugly, and we don't want to share that with our brand. Even where the stadium is located in deep East Oakland, where the undesired grime and ruggedness is the decor, it's deemed unfit for such a glamorous team. 50 years ago, Oakland has embraced the Warriors, or for 50 years, Oakland has embraced the Warriors. This city was the refuge when San Francisco didn't support the Warriors, and then owner Frank Mullini was ready to bounce to San Diego. The region, with its rough edges and bent on loyalty, made the Warriors relevant when the franchise wasn't shiny enough to attract San Francisco as well. Oakland made the Warriors, the East Bay made the Warriors, so even though the grass might be financially greener in San Francisco, the theme is common. This area isn't good enough. This is about business, no doubt. Lacob maximizing his investment. It's about getting money. The problem with that is the fans' dedication wasn't about money. It was personal. It always will be. Business decisions don't go over well in personal relationships. And when you choose a girl across the street, it really hurts. You have time to... You have to be from here to understand why San Francisco is that to us. And I think he really kind of touches on everything I was trying to say last week. Is there's just, like you said, a certain panache to Oakland. And with Oakland being gentrified the way it is, and the Bay Area, for that matter, being gentrified the way it is, it just, for me, kind of represents the death of the Bay Area that I grew up in. And so I think that's why it's a little more personal to me, because the Bay I grew up in was so vibrant with culture, from San Francisco to Oakland to the South Bay to East Palo Alto. I mean, there was so much diversity and culture, and now it's just becoming this tech hub, and that's kind of it. And I just think when they had Cirque du Soleil at the groundbreaking ceremony for the Chase Center, nothing is less Oakland than Cirque du Soleil. So it's just, you know, for me, it's the death of an era. And, you know, it's sad that that these teams, and I don't begrudge owners for doing this, because they don't, I mean, Joe Lacob, he's from, I believe he's from the New England area. He's from Boston, isn't he?
I'm not sure.
I think. But anyway, I'm pretty sure he's from that general area. So he wouldn't obviously have the same connection the fans would, or as if he grew up in Oakland or in the East Bay. He's not going to have the same connection. And look, you know, he's in it he's a businessman. He's looking to make money, so it's hard to begrudge him. It just, you know, the whole thing kind of sucks, you know. But I thought those were two interesting points of views to bring into the show, and I'll let it go for some time, and we could talk about other things that make me sad, like the 49ers.
Kick them all down right now.
Yeah. San Francisco sadness.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it was. It was just I woke up this morning, and I started really thinking about what it is after the Niners moved. I mean, almost immediately, I felt a disconnect. I've talked about it on the show before. And with the Warriors moving, I feel something similar. I feel that approaching. And that just really, it stinks because me growing up, a lot of my childhood, my family time was spent around these games. The reason I love sports so much, my grandfather was a coach. So watching the Niners was a family event. We knew what we were doing Sundays at 1 o'clock, you know. Watching a Warriors game, watching the Giants was a family deal, especially the big games. You know, I knew we were going to have dinner and we were going to watch. The TV was going to be on. There's going to be very little talking until the commercial breaks. And I just wonder, you know, if I was to have kids, and thankfully I don't yet.
Thankfully.
Yeah, can't really feed kids on top ramen. You know what I mean? But if I did have children, I just wonder if they would even be into sports, because that'd be really difficult being a parent of, you know, a kid who just wants to nerd out and like code all day or like be on Facebook. I don't know, but I just wonder if I would ever be able to have that same bond where we get to sit down and watch the Warriors or watch, you know, the Giants with the same way that I did as a kid, you know, because my kids ain't going to a game. I'm telling you that. It's too expensive. We might be able to squeeze in a Giants game here or there, but they will never see the Niners or the Warriors play a home game. That's for sure.
It really does suck that, like, you can't. I'm all for, you know, understanding, trying to get the most out of that team when you're a businessman. Like, that's what it is for you. But, like, there has to be some balance in there in your mind, knowing that this is, like, you know, a place where the community kind of comes together and like roots for their, you know, the name that's on your, essentially you're repping, you know, the city you're on. And like, I mean, having like some section or something that's just like specifically designed for people that can't do it. Like Milwaukee, they have the Brewers Stadium they have up there. They have a section that they're like, their tickets like never get more than $5 or something like that, you know? And granted, baseball for some reason has the ability to charge absolutely nothing for their ticket prices, which every other sport seems they have to charge you like at least $50 for the worst possible seat you're getting.
Well, you get 81 you know? Home games. Sure. Yeah, so that's a lot
true.
Of revenue.
Yeah, that's very know? True in that matter that they do have so much more to do so. But you'd hope that like
it's a lot of $12 beers.
Yeah, right. I mean, you'll make it up for the most part. I feel like if you're going to go there, if I got a ticket like that, I'm like, yeah, all right, more beer money for me right now. You know,
No, but I'm always looking to do that. Like when I lived in Arizona. Like, go see Diamondback games for a dollar on Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
You know, it was great.
Yeah.
Because then I could rationalize drinking 10 beers.
Right.
Not that I do that sort of thing. But if I were,
I never
drink responsibly, guys. But it was the same with the Warriors. I mean, they were affordable back in the day. In high school, one thing that me and a few of my buddies would do, and one a great thing to do for a date night, was, you know, you get the $5 tickets. You catch the BART, we go to the game, you know, you get it was great. I mean, and it was affordable, and it's just something that I know that I have, unless I win the lotto or something, I have no plans on taking my family to any of the games because, again, the prices, I think I was mentioning the other week that my buddy took his family to a Warriors game last season, and it cost him $1,500, and all I could say is, dog, that's a vacation.
Yeah.
For like 3 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
There's like good. All-inclusive resorts that you go to for 10 days for that amount of money.
You can go through Thailand and like, live as a king.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's, Derek, you want to get to that read?
We have a read coming up right now. So talking about practice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cold Creek Inn in Mount Shasta. The Cold Creek Inn features views of the surrounding snow-capped mountains, free high-speed Wi-Fi, and organic in-room coffee, offering guest rooms with single bed to family suites that sleep up to 8. Conveniently located downtown Mount Shasta near Siskiyou Ice Rink and only 10 miles from Mount Shasta Ski Park. The Cold Creek Inn can be reached by calling 800-292-9421 or at coldcreekinn.com.
That whole area up there is absolutely gorgeous. I don't know if you guys ever spend much time up around Mount Shasta. I go fishing for a week in McLeod every year, and it's
nice.
My favorite time of the year. It's just so, it's absolutely gorgeous. And just makes you wonder, you know, how bummed the Native Americans must have been once they lost all that, because that area is just it's God's country, as they say.
So, way to go from like, yeah,
I've been we're losing a team to,
oh, now you're
now
losing
I'm
land.
Depressed.
Yeah, I'm sorry. this is FM 90.1 KZFR broadcasting from downtown Chico, California to the foothills.
Reminding you of your violent past.
I know, I was going to say.
Reminding you guys
collective
of
guilt. Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure they didn't feel good about losing the windswept plains in Nebraska either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm sure it hurt a little more here because it's just a little prettier.
Well, great. Anyway. I don't think the people in the windswept plains had a chance to visit here, but you know.
Yeah, so they probably thought what they had was awesome.
I think that was great, yeah.
When it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was.
I think about it. With wolves, right? It was gorgeous.
Living off
there.
It's gorgeous, you know, living off the land and just, you know, not even having like a carbon footprint whatsoever.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I've always said, like, if I could go back to, like, any era in, like, history, I'd go back to, like, the cowboy era where, like, you could just, you know, you ride out, you have everything on you, like, you take care of yourself out there, you know? It's kind of, like, a very, I don't know, fulfilling life, I feel. Like, I'm taking care of myself. I don't need
a
but home.
It was also extremely brutal.
Yeah, no, true, no doubt. No. Like, we like to think that we're, like, we have a really tough life, but, like, in reality, you probably live in, like, the best era possible with, like, the amount of conveniences we have, technologically speaking.
Right. Well, just the medical advancements, the fact that, you know, you're not going to die from scurvy or something, you know?
Typhoid or something.
Right. Pneumonia is not a deadly disease.
Exactly.
Yeah, the common cold was pretty deadly back then, so.
Diarrhea would get you, you know?
Yeah, so. Oh, man. How do we get down this path?
Nobody sleep on diarrhea. It's still very dangerous, people.
Yeah, and awful. Speaking of diarrhea, the San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers are looking for a new head coach. It seems that they're closing in on Kyle Shanahan. And at face value, this sounds like a great idea. Kyle Shanahan is that architect behind the Falcons' success on the offensive side of the ball. He is their offensive coordinator this season. Matt Ryan, if you will all remember, had an 8-8 year last year after starting 5-0. And I was saying, don't trust the Falcons then, too. That worked out swimmingly for me. But they did not have a great season. And so a lot of people are pointing to Kyle Shanahan as helping kind of turn right the ship, as they say. And so the Niners are closing in on making him their head coach. They still don't have a general manager, which is kind of backwards if you ask me. Usually you get your general manager, they pick a head coach, but whatever, it's the Niners. So nothing is really surprising from the way they've run that franchise the last few years. But and so on its face, I'm cool with it. Whatever, they need a head coach. He seems like the best available. Great. What I'm not cool with is this idea that they're going to go out and get Kirk Cousins. Kyle Shanahan, I believe, was part of the staff that drafted Kirk Cousins as they.
When he was with his dad in Washington.
Yeah. And he's a big proponent of Kirk Cousins. And Kirk Cousins, Kirk Cousins is going to demand $20 million a year.
You like that?
You like that?
You I mean, come on! You don't need that. We need that enthusiasm in the Bay
Area.
He's
a huge upgrade on what they got right now.
Right? Okay. Fair enough.
You're giving him a hard time.
I'm surprised. About
I think
this.
He's terrible. But
okay. See, there it is.
Yeah.
He throws the ball downfield, unlike your buddy Alex Smith.
No doubt, he does do that. Not very effectively all the time. The numbers look really good. Some of the numbers look really good for him, but when you really watch the games, I'm just not too impressed with who he is. He's too inconsistent. But my bigger point is. The Redskins are going to tag him. They're going to franchise tag Kirk Cousins. So if the Niners want to go after him, they're going to have to trade, and they're going to have to take up $20 million per year on their cap hit to pick him up, and probably have to give up a first rounder. Which if you're Washington, I can't think of a better scenario for them. It's a win-win. You don't have to pay Kirk Cousins $20 million, and you could get a first-round draft pick. So you could go to your fans. Like, any fan could understand why you would do that. But let's just say Kirk Cousins is a great quarterback, okay? I still don't understand the trade for him, even if he is, you know, let's say, you know, top 10 quarterback in the league. And this is why. The Niners are bereft of any talent. They have no one offense, on defense. They have nobody. I mean, nobody.
When you're offering
Carlos Hyde.
Yeah, I was saying you're asking
for Carlos Hyde is decent. Okay,
he's a good running back.
They have,
but you're right. He doesn't have the receivers that Cousins had in Washington. Jackson,
their receivers are terrible. Vance McDonald has been okay at the tight end position. Their defense
is okay.
Yeah,
there's nothing. Yeah,
there's nothing spectacular.
No, there's nothing. There's nothing really
not
to build
value
upon. So you get let's say you get Kirk Cousins, you have to give up a first rounder, and then you're going to surround him with what? Because if you guys remember, Kirk Cousins was last seen throwing an interception to end their season, get him out of the playoffs, when he was surrounded by Pierre Garçon, when he was surrounded with DeSean Jackson. I mean, also, who's there?
Jordan Reed.
Jordan Reed, yeah. So, I mean, that offense is incredibly talented at skill positions. You're going to downgrade him to possibly the worst wide receiving unit in all of the NFL and pay him $20 million a year to do what? That's what I'm saying. They're in rebuild mode, and I don't think – one, I don't believe Kirk Cousins is a franchise quarterback. And even if he was, I would imagine this rebuild's going to take 3 to 5 years minimum, because you're going to have to rebuild through the draft. So
yeah, use your high pick on a quarterback, you know what I mean, or even second round, whatever. But yeah, try and get a guy that's ready to come in and build the team with all the young new talent that you're going to have. I agree with you as far as having Cousins in there. Everybody's going to be playing catch up, you know what I mean? And then you have the risk of him like regressing over the next 3 or 4 years, right?
I feel
you know
like
what Cousins, I mean? Because I feel like he's at his highest point that he's ever been.
He would probably be like the perfect fit for a team that's ready to contend.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I don't see Washington getting rid of him because they were sniffing the playoffs this year. Mm-hmm. You know, they like you pointed out, they have so much talent on offense.
Right.
And it doesn't make sense for them to try and get another quarterback because last time they had a high pick like that, they had RG3 and that didn't work out well.
Right.
So I think they're going to be a little gun shy of giving up what they have. Yeah, he's not a Brady. He's not a Roethlisberger when healthy. He's not a Russell Wilson. But there's a huge drop off after like the 10th or 12th best quarterback.
Yes, there is.
You know what I mean? There's teams that have been wandering in the desert for years looking for the guy. And I think if you got Kirk Cousins, I think you can win a few playoff games. You know, I just look at some of these dudes who have won. Trent Dilfer's won a Super Bowl. Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Great. Like, I feel like that era
they had great defenses. Yeah, I just like did pick out two of the best defenses ever. So
yeah, I mean, that era, I feel, of being able to have a subpar quarterback is very difficult nowadays, especially with the style of football that's
expected. Happened last year. A Super Bowl winner had...
I mean, to be able to compare Peyton Manning to Trent Dilfer is, that's, I feel like, granted, where Peyton Manning was in his career, yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Again, though, top-tier defense of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But that's
you look at the Ravens defense, that Bucks defense, last year's Broncos, you know, even the 85 Bears. I mean, Jim McMahon wasn't that good of a quarterback.
No.
Come on.
No.
You know what I mean? But it takes that upper echelon defense.
Yeah. But the problem is, first of all, in the NFL, there's so many if you have a quarterback, great. But I think we've all got sucked into this mindset that you need a quarterback to win, and we just went through a litany of teams that have done it. And granted, they did it with all-time great defenses. But I think franchises just need to begin to start to think about this differently. And how can we – let's say we don't have a top 10 guy. How can we still build around that, work around that deficiency, and get a guy who can be an Alex Smith type of player, game manager, someone of that ilk who can just carry your team and just build around him, or just do something completely different? Because it just seems that if you don't have a quarterback, you're pretty much out of it. And even though, again, the Broncos just did it last year, but it just seems like if you don't have that guy, maybe you just build your team slightly different. I don't know. It just seems like something that you never hear anyone talk about, because I think it wouldn't really appeal to your fan base if you go, yeah, we're not really going to worry about the quarterback.
Right.
We're going to have a great defensive line and secondary.
It's hard to sell.
It is really hard to sell. But I just think teams need to begin to contemplate, look, like, there's only about 10 guys on the planet who are going to be really, really exceptional at this. And everyone else is fairly interchangeable beyond that. Like you were just saying, Noobs. So, maybe we build this team different. You know, that's why I like the Cowboys going and getting Zeke Elliott. You know, for the past 10 years, running backs have kind of been trending where, they've been devalued and they don't get him in the first round. And the Cowboys said, forget this. He seems ridiculous. We're just going to go ahead and take him. And, I mean, look what that team did with a rookie quarterback, but they had, great talent all around. So, I don't know. I just I think the Warriors, or the Warriors, I'm still sad about that.
What does British Alexa have to say?
She's not happy about Kirk Cousins either, apparently.
You've heard Apple's case.
I'll move off it. I think Alexa got tired with it, too. I don't know. The Niners, they're just... It's been a sad few years, and it just seems to get sadder.
I wonder if we'll ever get back to the era where they groomed quarterbacks for two or three seasons before just throwing them to the wolves. It seemed like back in the day you draft a guy and he wouldn't become your starter for like two or three, four seasons. But now it's like you draft a guy now, he's like immediately your starter.
But part of
people are desperate for hope, I feel.
You know, and it works out with like the Jameis Winstons of the world, the Cam Newtons of the world, but then, you know, and Mariota has come on pretty well, and you have Derek Carr, you got success stories, but there's also all these like, you know, Charlie Whitehurst and all
everyone
these
that went from Cleveland. Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody that goes to Cleveland. I don't know if they're cursed or what the deal is with that. But it's just like sometimes I think just because you have a high draft pick doesn't mean that the best quarterback out there is going to be a great guy. Like you might like to your point about rebuilding differently instead of just getting the quarterback and then putting the pieces around him. Maybe you get all the pieces and maybe you wait those two, three, 4 years until the Andrew Luck comes out.
Right. But you build your team. That's what I'm saying. Is you build your lineup, you build your D line, you build your offensive line. If there's dynamic skilled position players that you could grab, you grab those guys. And then when you're bringing and you develop a quarterback that you take in the second, third, fourth round, and if he's the guy, you know, then as these other guys are getting playing time and getting better, then you bring him up, and then you know you make him your starter. I just don't see what you know getting someone. And I mean, Phillip Rivers has been discussed too, that they might go after, which is great. That's a huge upgrade from what we've had the last few years for the Niners. But again, who's he throwing to? I mean, you know, it's just, I don't see why a free agent would want to come to the Niners at quarterback, unless it's just for the money. And from the Niners' perspective, or any team that's in the rebuilding process, why, unless you have someone who you think can be like an Andrew Luck or can be that franchising, that franchise changing guy, I don't see why you even bother. And that part of the problem that you were talking about, that these guys, you know, are, or I think you mentioned it, Derek, these guys, there's so much demand on them, but these coaches aren't getting much time either.
No.
And that's part of the problem is these coaches are getting, I mean, the Niners just had three coaches in 3 years. Alex Smith, I believe his first 7 years with the Niners had a different OC every year.
Every season.
So, I mean, that's part of the problem too, you know, and that's why I think you need to, NFL or presidents of these franchises need to start looking at this different and saying, look, I'm going to build an entire team from my GM to my coach. Those guys are going to be just as important to what we do around here as our starting quarterback, and start to build an entire team instead of saying let's keep reaching on these quarterbacks, because you'll end up where the Browns have ended up, and they've used how many first round draft picks on quarterbacks?
I mean, you're also going to say, like, you're looking at that notion right there, Chicago being a place where they took Jay Cutler, who was actually a really good quarterback, and made him awful right now because, again, that inconsistency in that top office. How many offensive coordinators has he gone through and whatnot? Mm-hmm. I mean, Cutler's got an arm, and he can be a really good quarterback, I feel, if you put him in a correct system. But, again, this idea that you have to win now, and if you're my head coach, I expect you to take me to the playoffs every single year, no matter who you are. And if you don't do it, your head's on the line almost, I feel like, with half the teams out there. And you don't get that consistency out there and that ability to build that team up you need to. Because that's one of the reasons why Dallas was able to be so good, is they had a great offensive line that allowed them to have a rookie quarterback and running back in there.
No doubt.
That could run all over the place. You know, like I said, they built that team correctly.
I think you have a lot of expectations that are just, you know, overreaching for some of these owners. The wild expectations just aren't realistic. I mean, they expect, like, what did you expect to happen with Chip Kelly? Like, they were going to go 10-6 and make the playoffs?
Yeah.
I mean, you're rebuilding. You know what I mean? Like, you go 1-15, so what? Like, this is the guy's first year, and I'm not saying Chip Kelly's the guy, but I'm just saying, like, if I'm an owner, like, you got to give, you hire a guy, you got to give him at least 3 years. I would say maybe even four.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Think of it as like a college. You give him 4 years to where his first recruiting class becomes seniors.
Yeah.
And by then, granted, this isn't college, but I'm just saying, you have to give time for the program, for the system to kick in, for him to get the right mix of veterans and young talent. I mean, you have to give a guy a shot. And 1 year, when you basically hand him nobody, and then tell him, okay, well, then we're going to start this guy because this is what, you know what I mean? We don't want to pay him. It's just like, I don't know. You know, to me, it's just like unrealistic expectations. It was killing some of these front offices and head coaching staffs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's just like there's no room for any, like, you know what I mean, development.
Right, exactly. So anyway, we'll see what happens with the Niners. All I know is if we get Kirk Cousins, I think I'm going to get off the Niner narcotic for a few years, if not life. They already moved to Santa Clara, which began to rip out my heart.
And you then, and Jake could have start like a two-person picket line.
Yeah.
Outside
yeah.
Levi's Stadium.
Me and Jake.
These are not my Niners.
These are not my Niners.
That's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. Speaking about injustice.
It's the theme now.
Oh, man. I think this show has all been about the things that just make me sad, which I'm sorry about, but that's where we ended up today. I wanted to talk about the Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame. It's been announced. Jeff Bagwell made it. Tim Raines, Yvonne Rodriguez, or Pudge, and which is interesting because Pudge has been tied to steroids, never tested positive, as we were talking about off air. But because Canseco named him, and as much credibility as Canseco lacks elsewhere, I think he's been pretty credible on the whole steroids issue. So I don't know. That's
I mean, when you're on a team that, like the Texas team that he was on with Canseco, that's surrounded with the amount of people that or linked to PEDs, it's kind of hard for you not to have your name thrown in that bucket as well, you know?
The only thing I would say, he has been right about quite a few players, but the only thing that I'd say is he was trying to sell a book.
No doubt.
And it was pretty sensational. And I just wonder if maybe there was like a bunch of truths in there, but also some falsehoods.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But to say he injected Pudge on that team, I think Yvonne Rodriguez himself and one of the other major players, because that was a pretty like hard-hitting team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think they were like up there in all-time home runs as far as
wasn't
team.
Palmeiro on that team?
Rafael Palmeiro. Yeah. I think after he was an Oriole,
He was, after the
and Royals. And a lot of those guys were kind of up there in age, too, and we're still having significant seasons. So, I don't know. Canseco has kind of been somewhat of a joke, but
sure.
I agree, though. He has been pretty spot on with a lot of these guys. But at the same time, I don't think that you can keep a guy out based on hearsay and conjecture of a clown.
Sure.
No matter how truthful that clown has turned out to be. The one thing I would say that I think this is opening the door, though. We're getting younger writers in there.
Yes.
And stuff like that. And I think that you're going to have a scenario where, like, I think Poppy's in. Because Poppy has never actually, I don't think, failed a test. Although his name was linked to the 2003 test.
That the
was
anonymous test.
The one that wasn't supposed to come out.
Right.
But so, you know, there's that. But I think like...
And so was Pudge for that matter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so there you go. So there's two things that kind of are dings on that. But as far as like Barry Bonds, I mean, let's be realistic. Steroids or no steroids? That guy was one of the best hitters of all time.
If you're going to put Jeff Bagwell in there, like...
That's
I think
another
even,
thing.
I
wasn't
think,
he connected?
Yeah, like, he has to be because he's in that era too. Now, granted, he wasn't as like...
Well, I think the only thing we have on him is body type, right? Because he was kind of a muscular guy and then he was just like...
And he just blew up.
Looked like Patrick Willis over the plate, you know?
Wasn't another Astro that died? Was it Caminiti that died?
Ken Caminiti?
Yeah. He like killed himself or something.
Damn, I didn't even know that.
Because there was some kind of talk about the Astros because they were all Astros at that time.
Yeah.
Bagwell, Biggio, and I think Ken Caminiti. Anyway, there was some connection. I should do my homework a little bit better before I start going down that road. But yeah, Bagwell, I remember Bagwell being almost more of a suspect than Pudge.
Yeah, he definitely had a look about it. That's something that he would be using, especially, again, everyone in that era kind of is going to have some link to it. If you were able to hit home runs it's kind of difficult for you to your name not to be kind of not saying it is, whether you did or didn't. It's just kind of natural at this point in time, and I think baseball needs to accept that.
For a guy to hit 60 home runs 3 years in a row like Sammy Sosa did,
yeah,
when nobody had hit over 61 in like 50 years,
something's got to be changing right now.
So yeah. I want to talk about what you said about Bonds being a Hall of Famer prior to the steroids. So in 1998, I believe it was, Bonds hit 37 home runs and 122 RBI, which is insane. And this is before the use. And this is the same year, however, that Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa were chasing the record. And so what Bonds was doing kind of got overlooked. Now, keep in mind, at this point, Bonds had already had a three-time MVP winner, should have won that 91 MVP as well. So he was already a Hall of Fame player at that point. And basically what happened is Bonds wasn't getting his, I guess, his proper respect, his proper due, because we had guys hitting 60 home runs. And he was completely getting overlooked. And then, by all accounts, the steroids kind of began after that. And I almost look at it like this. It's not Bonds who we should be disappointed in. It's baseball. Baseball let Bonds down. Baseball should have been protecting against the greatness of someone like Bonds. And what they did, it was the Wild West, man. Everyone was on the juice, and Bonds was doing what he thought he needed to do to stay relevant. And it's just, I just don't think that gets discussed very much. Is almost look at him as the biggest victim of the steroid era, and by the way, when he was juicing, that was the greatest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. That 73 home run season, I was there for a 73rd. Every time he came up to the plate, you thought he was knocking it out every single time, and I've never felt like that since. I never felt like that prior.
It was an amazing thing.
It was just unreal to watch. I remember in that World Series when he hit the ball, and I forgot who the pitcher was on the Angels, but he mouthed, "That's the farthest ball I've ever seen hit," you know, and it was just the moonshots he was having, just unreal. So hopefully baseball comes around, and I think, like you said, with these younger voters, that this is something moving forward. I think Bonds and Clemens, for that matter, will both get in. We'll see.
I'm not sure about Clemens, because I think Clemens kind of spat in the face of collective community.
He's dug his own grave even more so.
Yeah, he went in front of Congress and lied.
That's
true. I mean, he kept lying and lying and lying, where Barry is just, you know, like, Barry technically has never failed a test.
Yeah.
That is true.
That's accurate. Yeah.
I mean, but you have the whole Balco thing. I mean, it's very clear to anybody who has two eyes and watched any of those games that the dude was physically not the same guy that he was. I mean, he was a slender guy who could steal 30 bases.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, and then he turns into the Hulk, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
But to your point, though, that was probably the coolest thing I've ever seen, like, where it became a cultural thing. Like, I remember being at Tres Hombres, and the entire restaurant stopped to watch his at bat. You know what I mean? People that just, like, generally wouldn't really even care about baseball.
Sure.
But it was like this event. You know what I mean? Like we said, every time he's either going to hit it out of the park, he's going to strike out, or they're going to walk him.
Right.
And they'd intentionally walk him with the bases loaded, because they would be like, we'll give up one run as opposed to four.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It didn't happen often, but I remember it happening a couple times where it's like, damn, nobody gets that kind of respect. You know,
no doubt.
And they should, because he was the most dangerous hitter for those couple years, that one year especially. It was off the charts.
I mean, again, I think baseball just kind of needs to come to the understanding that they had this era. Don't try to shy away from it.
They promoted
There was some, yeah, exactly. There were some great
chicks
people.
Chicks dig,
like,
the long ball.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember clearly the whole, my neighbors were from Chicago, so they were diehard Sammy Sosa fans was going on, so I remember hearing their whole plight. But it brought people on board, and it kept people entertained. So just have it, like, hey, this is an era in baseball in which a lot of people were using substances that helped that ball go even farther, and they were the best at it, you know? And we enjoyed that time. You know,
well, Tim Vranes just got in, and what's been holding him back was his image, because he was a player in the 80s, and he has famously said he would slide head first because he had his cocaine vial in his back pocket. You know, so I mean, look, cheating's been going on forever in baseball. I think baseball just needs, I think we're all in agreement here. Baseball should just embrace this era. It happened. It wasn't its shining hour, but baseball was never as popular as, at least in modern times, in recent times, as it was in 98 through the early 2000s.
I mean, because they're trying to cover from the whole strike situation that happened, that they're like just clamming for anything to take them back into some relevance in people's spirit, and that's what happened.
So it's like either there was an institutional you know, like promotion of this, which was in some of the advertising campaigns. I mean, I don't know how much Nike had to do with it, but like MLB either looked the other way or was completely like aware and just was like, whatever. Cause to your point, we needed it so bad. Damn. After 94, so many people fell off. Cause like the World Series is something everybody counts on. It's like death and taxes. Everybody loves the World Series. You know, people who hadn't watched baseball all year will watch that. When you have 100 plus years of uninterrupted World Series and then they don't get it done, you know, that did hurt baseball. I mean, baseball went from being as popular as the NFL to like, you know, a distant second.
Right.
You know, maybe even third now with the NBA. You know what I mean? So that hurt them a lot. And, you know, the dollars and cents come into it. Bud Selig to me is like, you know, that's the one guy that they should think about not putting in the Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. he's been an owner for a long time. He's been involved with the league. You know, they have like separate wing for those types of dudes. But still, sure. that guy needs to be held accountable for what the hell happened.
Yeah, I mean, everyone turned a blind eye, even though it was pretty obvious what was happening in retrospect. And I think that I don't think the players should be the ones necessarily punished because, look, this is their livelihood. And if you can get an advantage and almost illegally or morally, and this is a capitalistic society. And if you could get the money, then in most cases, people do what they feel is necessary to do that. So, you know, I just think baseball just needs to kind of get over itself and just get out of the way here. And these writers making these moral judgments and kind of making it up as they go just seems ridiculous. But I'm doing what I do to you every week, Derek. I leave you with 5 minutes to get in as much as you can about whatever it is you want to talk about. Now, you wanted to mention Wayne Rooney before you did your Grinds My Gears.
Correct? Yeah.
All right. Go ahead, bud.
I got to give a little quick shout out to the man, Wayne Rooney. If you don't know who he is a Manchester United star who's been with that team for years. And he now holds the club record for the most goals scored for Manchester United, passing the great Sir Bobby Charlton. He scored his 250th goal on a pretty delicious free kick from the last game against Stoke City and finally took over that spot. He'd been kind of chasing that number this entire year, and it's been something that's been holding over him. The media, especially over in England, has been giving him a hard time, but he's kind of been sticking through and trying to find a nice correlation between him and the media right now. And for him to do this on that, especially that goal that he did score, it was pretty awesome. I mean, if you haven't seen the goal, if you're a fan, check it out because it really was pretty spectacular.
I didn't even realize he was still playing.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He's been in there for a while, and he's still, you know, a part of the Manchester United squad over there. And
he's still a leading striker.
Yeah, he is. So he's one of the three people that's currently active as the leader for his club and country, the other two being Leo Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, that's awesome. Baseball, jeez. Football is in a good place right now. There's all sorts of stars.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this popularity is growing ever more so in this country. It's still the number one thing out there in the
rest
of the world.
Just not on the show. Moving on.
We should maybe talk a little bit next week about the World Cup expanding to 48 teams.
Oh, yeah. Let's definitely do that.
Interesting. Yeah, it's, you know, some people think it's a great thing, but
I think it's overkill.
Yeah, a little
agreed.
Bit.
Agreed.
You're going to have a bunch of teams in there just getting knocked out right away.
Honestly,
right.
You're getting
Qatar, Trinidad and Tobago. Come on.
You're just like inviting half the country to come play football right
now.
That's
why you have 4 years of qualifying.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, yeah, what's it going to be now? So, hey, that's the next week's topic.
All right, fair enough.
So, yeah, good old Wayne Rooney right there. He's taking that spot and really highlighting himself as being one of the greatest Manchester United players ever.
And you have some Grinds My Gears?
I do.
All right, absolutely.
There's always an amount of hate out there that I can find. Something.
All right,
that
give
really
me a second. Let me get the music going.
That just annoys me a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, I got the music going.
Now,
you know
this
what
is
really
something
grinds my gears?
There we go. All right. If you have been recently paying attention to TV, you've been seeing these new commercials for the Dos Equis ad out there for the new most interesting man in the world. I have a really big problem with this right now because Dos Equis told me this old man with gray hair who tell me these great little quibs was the most interesting man in the world. Now, for unexplained reasons, he's gone. Granted, he's probably old and passed away something. But we have a new most interesting man in the world. I can no longer take you seriously, Dos Equis. Who's the most interesting man in the world? We can't have two of them because we just had one, and now we have a new one. Like, it just makes me feel like your beer is now some questionable product, and I can't take it. I have to question everything you're doing
now. It looks
like
Michael Phelps spent too much time in the pool.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, little pruny dude right
I'm
there.
Down, yeah.
It does look like an older, very sun-tanned and weathered Michael Phelps. That's a great call.
So, yeah, the most interesting man in the world for those Ekkies. I'm not buying it. I'm sorry. I can't take you seriously.
You know what really grinds my gears?
People that use the Roomba vacuum. The people that automatic vacuum. Like, you're taking a task of chores and cleaning as the easiest thing out there. It's, like, not sweeping. You're literally just pushing something over, and it's sucking up everything for you.
We're outsourcing ourselves now.
Yes. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, we have it. Like, you're getting... it's a fun chore to do, actually. I don't know about you. Like, if I had to clean my house, my favorite thing doing is vacuuming. Because all you're doing is pushing on this automatic... Yeah. machine, and it's like doing everything for you.
Immediate results too. It's instant gratification.
Exactly. It is. You roll over something and it's gone. Yep. You know, you don't have to like sweep it up in a pile and then put it into a dustpan and then dump the trash. No, it's gone instantaneous. But no, we have to have robots do it for us. Oh God, people, stop with the Roomba vacuum.
They're not even that effective. They just keep banging into the couch too. It's just like what's going on?
I don't really see it being like how beneficial it is.
You got one more?
I do, yeah.
You know what really grinds my gears?
Same side sitters. For those of you who aren't aware what this is right now, it's when you're on a date with someone or two people go out to grab a dinner or lunch and they sit on the same side of the table when there is a seat across from them. Yeah. Because that's such an awkward place to be in. Yep. Like when you're on it with somebody and you're sitting next to them, it's just not natural to talk to that person. I remember I went on a date with my ex of mine and we were forced to be on the same side because it was a one-sided booth. And I hated it. I was so over this right now, but there's nowhere else to sit right there. So we're kind of forced into, like, this is the table they reserved for us because I said it was my birthday and they gave us something special. And I got a same